Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Okay, picture this. You step into the Key West Museum. The air is thick, hushed, and there's this faint, kind of unsettling smell of salt just hanging there. Maybe it's the sea nearby, maybe not.
Yeah.
You see a damp cloth just left on a bench, like someone just wiped something down. And all around, people are whispering, really quiet, almost like reverent. As they get close to this one glass case, inside, under this soft light, there's a doll, life-sized, sailor suit, faded now. Its button eyes are dark, and they just seem to follow you every little move. This isn't just some old toy in a display. This is Robert and his story. It's definitely not over.
And today, we're really diving deep into something special. This isn't just folklore, you know. We're looking at an object, an entity, really, whose story is built just as much on documented reports, actual, tangible apologies, as it is on those whispered legends. We are talking about Robert the Doll, whose whole saga, frankly, challenges how we think about inanimate objects. Our mission, really, is to carefully unpack all the layers, from how he came to be, which is surprisingly normal, all the way to his impact today, where he still gets this intense, almost ritualistic response from people.
So why should the story matter to you, listening right now? Because Robert, well, it's more than just a creepy doll tale. Way more. It's this fascinating kind of unsettling look at how belief and observation and what seems like real evidence, how they all intersect, they blur the lines, you know, what is normal and what feels truly inexplicable. It shines a light on how some objects just seem to soak up, well, a life of their own. They influence the reality around them. It makes you wonder, what gives an object that kind of power? Let's get into this history.
The doll's genesis and early manifestations.
Okay, to really get a handle on Robert, we have to go back. Right back to the start. His creation. What did he actually look like then? What was the scene when he first showed up in Key West?
Well, looking at him now, even through the museum glass, he doesn't scream menace right off the bat. He's pretty big, maybe 3 feet tall. Almost child-sized, which is part of the weirdness. The face is simply stitched, button eyes, yeah, they're unnerving, but not designed to be evil, you know? He's got this sailor suit, blues and whites, but it's faded now, obviously, over 100 years old. But there's this weight, how still he sits. A sense of history, you feel it. The fabric looks almost slightly damp sometimes, absorbing the quiet, witnessing things. But imagine him not in a museum. Imagine him in a house, early 1900s Key West. That's the key context. Yes, and the historical records, they're pretty solid on this. This wasn't some ancient cursed thing dredged up from the sea. It was made, actually crafted, in 1904 in the Otto family's house, quite a wealthy family in Key West, specifically for their son, Robert Eugene Otto, though he preferred to be called Gene. And a servant, a seamstress working for the family, supposedly made the doll for him. Life-sized. Now this detail, it's really crucial for our deep dive. It gives us a clear, non-mystical starting point. It's not some vague legend. It's rooted in a specific time, place, human hands making a toy. And honestly, what's fascinating is how totally ordinary it all sounds. Just a handmade gift. It wasn't found in a crypt or anything dramatic. It was domestic craftsmanship. And that normal beginning, that's what makes everything that follows feel so much more striking. Unsettling.
That really is a key point. A homemade toy from a place of, well, apparent care. But if it started so normally, how did it go from being Gene's companion to something else? Something that would cause decades of unease, fear, maybe even genuine supernatural events. Where did the stories start to change?
Exactly. That ordinary start is what makes the whole thing so uniquely disturbing. We kind of expect powerful things to have dramatic origins, right?
Yeah.
Curses, rituals, whatever. Robert just defies that, and that creates this mental friction, forces you to consider that maybe unsettling power can bubble up from anywhere. It blurs those comfortable lines we draw between just an object and something more. It wasn't a fairy tale. It started in a real home. That makes it feel uncomfortably close. It makes you question cause and effect, doesn't it? What's alive, what isn't?
Okay, so the doll's in the Otto house with young Gene.
Yeah.
What were the first hints that Robert wasn't just sitting there? That he was maybe more active, more aware?
Well, the first accounts often mention the neighbors. Imagine living nearby. Day after day, people would glance over at the Otto house, especially the upstairs windows, and they'd see the doll. But here's the unsettling part they reported. Robert wasn't always in the same spot in the window. One day, maybe a neighbor like Mrs. Henderson, she swears she saw him looking left, towards the harbor. The next day, the mailman, Mr. Peterson, known for noticing details, might report seeing him facing straight out. Then maybe kids playing nearby would insist he was turned slightly right, like he was scanning the street. It wasn't just, you know, a trick of the light. It seemed dynamic, watchful, constantly shifting his view. It became this creepy neighborhood observation. And those sightings, they're powerful. But then you add the reports from inside the house, the auditory stuff. We have accounts, some documented later, from servant testimonies and diary entries saying they heard the doll murmur. Not just creaks or fabric rustling. They described a low, sort of uneven voice, a weird whispering coming from Robert. This takes it beyond just seeing something odd. This is like direct communication. Or self-expression.
Like the doll was trying to interact with the world somehow, or maybe just talking to itself. And these weren't just rumors. These were specific claims from people working in the house, a big shift from object to voiced entity.
Okay, so we've got Robert apparently moving on his own, shifting his gaze in the window, and now reportedly whispering. But the accounts didn't stop there, did they? It wasn't just Robert acting strange. The house itself seemed to react around him. What kind of physical things were happening?
Yeah, this is where it really ramps up. Beyond just seeing or hearing things, the early reports documented within the family history, they list actual physical disturbances. Things that couldn't easily be explained away. We're talking about things like broken chairs, just found like that, sometimes splintered, like something forceful happened, and slammed doors echoing through the house when no one was apparently near them. These weren't just, you know, feelings or the house settling. These were tangible, observable changes, physical impacts. It suggests an active, disruptive force was present, something messing with the peace and, well, the furniture of the home. The sheer physicality starts setting Robert's story apart from just spooky feelings. And it raises that question. Was this just happening around Jean, or was its influence spreading through the whole house?
And all these early signs, they seem to build towards one particularly chilling and really well-remembered incident. Tell us about that night Robert paid the parents a visit.
All right, this event really solidified the fear for the family. It took things to a new level. Imagine waking up, middle of the night, pitch dark, maybe disoriented, and you see the doll, not in Jean's room where it belongs, but standing there, silently, at the foot of the parents' bed. Just its presence there, in that private space, in the dark, that alone would be terrifying, a total violation. The shock finding this toy, which should be elsewhere, now seemingly watching you sleep, it must have been profound. But what makes the specific report so potent, so enduring in the lore, are the very specific sensory details. These were recorded in family stories and later accounts gathered by investigators. They found the doll's clothes were noticeably damp. Not just a little bit, but damp, and it carried this distinct, unmistakable smell of the sea, like it had been near the ocean. So this isn't just Robert moving rooms inside the house. This suggests he'd been outside, or somehow connected to this elemental force. It adds this completely bizarre, inexplicable layer to his movements. It implies this secret night journey, an interaction with the outside world that just defies logic for a doll.
So let's pause there. A doll that moves itself, speaks, causes physical damage. And now, apparently, can leave the house, interact with the elements, and return damp and smelling of salt water. What does that mean? It just breaks all the rules for inanimate objects.
That detail, the dampness, the sea smell, it's incredibly significant, isn't it? It pushes the whole narrative beyond a simple haunting or, you know, maybe mass hysteria. It suggests this capacity for real external interaction, maybe a symbolic link to the power of nature, the ocean being right there in Key West. If you look at the bigger picture, it implies this emerging agency, a will of its own, an ability to cause physical changes that just don't fit our understanding of objects. This is really a key moment in cementing Robert's reputation. He stops being just a weird toy. He becomes something genuinely paranormal, something with its own strange, maybe even ancient feeling power. It forces a complete rethink.
Robert's enduring presence and escalating phenomena.
Now, Jean Otto, he grew up, became an artist. Did the doll just fade into a childhood memory, or did Robert stick around?
That's another layer to this. Robert didn't just disappear as Jean got older. Not at all. Even as an adult, an established artist, Jean Otto kept Robert close. Reports say he was intensely devoted to the doll. Robert apparently had his own room, or at least his own chair, often placed right beside Jean's bed. A constant presence. It suggests this incredibly enduring bond. Maybe codependent is too strong a word, but something far beyond a normal attachment to a toy. Robert wasn't just a memento. He seemed to be an active part of Jean Otto's adult life. Right up until Jean's death, it permeated everything. And because Robert remained, the phenomena apparently continued too. We have documented accounts from guests, people visiting the auto home, and a recurring theme, something multiple people reported independently, was that they swore its head followed them across the room. Not just a feeling, but a specific sustained observation, those button eyes tracking their movement, creating this really pervasive sense of being watched, scrutinized, maybe even judged by this doll. The fact that different guests who might not have known the full story beforehand reported the same thing, that adds weight. It suggests it wasn't just one person's imagination. These stories often pop up in letters or anecdotes collected over the years.
So the creepy surveillance continues. But it wasn't just visual stuff, right? Or even just confined to the room Robert was in. The influence seemed broader, affecting the whole house, even when Robert was supposedly put away.
Exactly. What's really fascinating, and frankly more disturbing, is the persistence of auditory phenomena, even when Robert was supposedly secured. Locked away, maybe in the attic, out of sight. Yet records from that time include multiple claims, again from different people, of hearing slow footsteps pacing the attic. This was at times when Robert himself was confirmed to be somewhere else entirely, maybe downstairs, maybe even locked in a trunk already. It suggests this ability to project his presence or influence things beyond his immediate location. Like he wasn't just a haunted object, but a haunting presence that filled the entire house. It makes the house itself feel like an extension of Robert's power, which raises that chilling question. How far did his reach actually extend?
So Robert's unsettling influence lasts throughout Jean Otto's life. And then Jean passes away. The house is sold. What did the new owners do? They must have wanted to deal with this legacy. And how did Robert react to that?
Right. Eventually, the house changed hands after Jean Otto died. New people moved in. And understandably, they wanted a fresh start. They encountered this strange life-size doll with this whole creepy history attached. They saw it as an oddity, maybe a nuisance, something to be dealt with. So their solution seemed logical enough. Get rid of it, or at least contain it. They decided to lock it away, put it in a trunk. Banish it to the attic. Out of sight, out of mind, right? The thinking was, presumably, if you lock it up, you stop the weirdness, reclaim the house. But the accounts from that moment, the attempt to contain him, they're incredibly chilling. Archival sources, gathering testimony from people present during that period, record this very specific detail. As they closed the trunk lid, securing Robert inside, they heard the distinct, sharp sound of the latch clicked shut, normal enough. But immediately after that click, multiple people swore they heard something else. They heard someone inside laughed, and they described it not as a house creak or wind or imagination, but a specific, audible almost, mocking sound coming from inside the trunk. It felt like a direct response. Defiance, like he knew what was happening and was somehow amused by it. A challenge to their control.
Wow. That laugh from inside the trunk, that takes it from just being active to seeming genuinely aware and malicious, maybe. But could there be another explanation? Nerves. An old house making sounds. People already spooked by the stories.
It's always the question, isn't it? Healthy skepticism is vital with stories like this. But what the archives suggest, looking at multiple accounts, sometimes from people who are initially quite dismissive, is this remarkable consistency. The timing right after the latch clicks shut. The description, not just a noise, but a laugh, often described as mocking or chilling. That consistency, especially from people who weren't necessarily believers beforehand, starts to challenge the easy explanations. If you connect it to the bigger story, this moment feels like a real shift. Robert goes from being this disruptive force in the house to seeming like a sentient entity, aware of being confined and reacting with personality, a rather nasty personality, it seems. It implies he found their attempts almost funny, hinting at a deeper, maybe manipulative awareness that wasn't going away.
The modern-day manifestations and the apology letters.
So eventually, Robert ends up out of the house, out of the attic. He's moved to the museum, put blind glass. You'd think, okay, that's it, contained, end of story. But no. This just opened a completely new, frankly, bizarre chapter, didn't it?
It really did. Today, Robert sits in the East Martello Museum in Key West, behind thick glass. He's a major exhibit, draws huge crowds, and you can genuinely feel something around his display. It's this weird mix of curiosity, definite unease, and this palpable respect, almost bordering on fear. Just looking at it through the glass, it reinforces his status. He's contained, yes, but still feels potent, still feels like he's exerting something. His old sailor suit, those button eyes, they're now the focus for thousands of people every year. Each visitor brings their own energy, their own reaction. The very air around the case feels charged, like he's still watching, still aware. And this museum setting, it created something entirely new, a modern form of interaction, which is incredibly well documented. We're talking about the hundreds of letters, maybe thousands by now, sent to the museum, addressed to Robert. And these aren't fan letters. They're not just notes saying hi. They are overwhelmingly formal, often quite desperate apologies, penned with real urgency, regret, sometimes outright terror. This massive collection of letters, it forms this unique living archive, documenting Robert's perceived influence right now. It's a testament to his enduring psychological grip. There's really nothing else quite like it in the museum world. These letters are real artifacts of belief and fear.
It's just staggering, isn't it?
Yeah.
An object, a doll behind glass, getting hundreds of apology letters from all over the globe. It says so much about, well, encountering something you can't explain and needing to make amends. What actually prompts people to write these? What are the supposed rules you break to warrant an apology to Robert?
Well, that's what's so fascinating. The legend has evolved, hasn't it? It now includes these specific, almost like terms of engagement. The letters overwhelmingly come from people who admit doing something specific. They confess, often in detail. Usually it's that they mocked it or took a photo without asking permission. It suggests this deeply ingrained, widely understood set of unwritten rules. You don't disrespect Robert. It implies that showing disrespect, violating his perceived space or dignity, has actual, tangible, negative consequences in the real world. It's not just about looking anymore. You have to look with the proper respect, maybe even ask permission silently, or you risk trouble. This shared understanding, like a social contract with a doll, shows how powerful these legends become, how they self-perpetuate in our modern world. Belief creates its own enforcement.
And the consequences. What kind of trouble are we talking about?
Mm-hmm.
What do these letters actually say happened after people slighted Robert?
The letters describe a really grim, often terrifying list of misfortunes. Things that happen soon after their visit. Things they directly blame on Robert. You read accounts of cars wrapped around trees and sudden inexplicable accidents, totaled vehicles, serious injuries, people losing their jobs overnight, just suddenly, out of the blue, careers collapsing. No logical reason given, or sudden severe bouts of sudden illness hitting them or their families. Things doctors can't explain. These aren't just minor annoyances like stubbing your toe. These are described as major life-altering calamities. And the writers explicitly attribute them to Robert's anger, his displeasure at being mocked or photographed without consent. The sheer range and severity is chilling. It turns Robert from just a spooky doll into this active agent of misfortune, a force capable of reaching out and impacting lives far beyond Key West. And there's this striking, almost ritualistic element you see in nearly all these letters, the closing. Almost invariably, they end with the simple phrase, Robert, I'm sorry.
Mm.
That uniformity, it's really telling. It's not just a random apology. It's become the phrase, part of the lore itself. It's like this recognized password, a plea for forgiveness that everyone understands is the required way to try and appease him. It shows how deeply this legend has permeated. People feel they have to follow this specific script to undo the harm, to lift the curse, basically. It's a powerful example of shared belief and action.
That's where it gets truly profound, I think, this pattern. Belief leading to a perceived consequence, leading to a specific act of atonement, writing a physical letter, sometimes sending it across continents, to a doll. This isn't just stories being told. It's belief actively shaping behavior on a large scale.
Exactly. When you look at the big picture, the very fact these letters exist in such volume, with this shared story arc, transgression, suffering, apology, it highlights the incredible impact these legends can have. It shows this powerful human need to find explanations for bad luck, for suffering. And here, people attribute it to a very specific, tangible source, even if it's an inanimate object. The belief is so strong it bypasses rational thought. It drives people to do things, writing apology letters to a doll that seem absurd from the outside. It really raises that crucial question about the power of belief itself. Is our collective focus on Robert, our fear, actually feeding the phenomenon, creating this feedback loop? It's a stark look at how stories can shape reality.
So even locked away, even studied and documented, Robert's story isn't just history. It still feels active. It carries this warning, doesn't it? A sense of caution that follows you.
Oh, absolutely. The legends surrounding Robert today aren't just recounting the past. They carry this very potent present-day warning. It feels like this ongoing vigilance radiates from the doll itself, even behind the glass. An implied awareness. Like, his influence isn't neutralized just because he's contained. He's still watching, still potentially active. The atmosphere around him reinforces that. It's not just a museum piece. It feels like an entity requiring ongoing caution. The rules still apply. Disrespect still has consequences. That feeling persists. And that pervasive sense of threat, it's perfectly captured in the final unsettling piece of advice often attached to his story. It's almost like a direct command to anyone who hears about him. Make sure the case is still locked before you go to sleep.
Huh?
That's not just a spooky line for effect, it's an instruction. It reinforces the idea that Robert's reach, his potential to act, isn't limited by the museum walls. It suggests his influence extends out into your home, into the night, demanding constant vigilance, constant respect. It really cements Robert not just as history, but as this living myth still wielding real psychological power.
So for us listening, engaging with this story may be miles away. What do we take from it? This blend of documented fact and outright strangeness, demanding caution, even now.
That final warning, it really solidifies Robert's status. He's not just a curiosity anymore. He's a living myth, exerting this ongoing psychological force. It suggests that even contained, he holds this subtle, lingering threat. It encourages, or maybe demands, this profound respect or fear that stays with you long after you stop thinking about him. It taps into that primal fear, doesn't it? The familiar, a doll, becoming deeply alien. It reminds us some things just defy easy answers and maybe require, well, deference. It really challenges our neat categories of alive and not alive, and shows how powerfully our beliefs can construct the reality we experience.
So our deep dive today, it's taken us from this seemingly simple doll, handmade in 1904 Key West, through decades of weirdness. Shifting in windows, whispers in the dark, those damp clothes smelling of the sea, footsteps in the attic, all the way to a museum exhibit today that still generates real fear and hundreds, maybe thousands of apologies. We followed this thread where an ordinary object just seems to break all the rules, gathering this legend that still unsettles people, still influences them.
And what's just riveting is how the verifiable stuff, the historical records, the documented disturbances seen by multiple people, the physical existence of all those apology letters, how it all weaves together with the purely legendary. It creates this phenomenon that genuinely challenges our tidy sense of reality. It shows us really vividly how objects can become these potent containers for our collective beliefs, our fears, our superstitions. They absorb it all, reflect it back, and blur that line between inanimate and animate until it almost disappears. That's why these stories endure.
This whole story, spanning over a century now, it really reminds you that sometimes the most ordinary things, a child's toy, can hold the most extraordinary, inexplicable power. It can turn a casual glance into a decision you regret, a moment of disrespect into a plea for forgiveness. Mm-hmm. And maybe as you think about all this, you can almost hear it too. That distant echo, a sharp latch click from an old trunk, followed by a very faint, very chilling laugh.
So we'll leave you with this final thought to chew on. When an object seems to demand an apology, what does that really tell us? Not just about the object, maybe, but about the incredible, sometimes irrational power we give to the things around us, how we shape our world with belief and fear. What would it actually take for you personally to feel that you have to sit down, take out a pen, and write a letter that just said, "Robert, I'm sorry,